The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
We welcome you today to Afternoons with Mike. I have the privilege of having Gary Wilson here. Gary is an attorney in Orlando, and he's with us today. Welcome to the program, Gary.
Thank you, Mike. It's great to be here, and thank you for the invitation.
So, Gary, tell us a little bit about your firm and about how people can get in touch with you.
Okay, thank you, Mike. Yes, our law firm, Wilson McCoy PA, we're located in Maitland. We're a small employment law firm that represents both employees and employers. My law partner, Nathan McCoy, is a Christian. It's been wonderful. He and I started our firm back in 2012, so we're coming up in February on our 10-year anniversary. But I think combined, we have close to 55-plus years, along with our associates, maybe 60 years of legal experience in the employment law area, representing, again, employees and employers, some union employees, primarily police and firefighters that we currently represent.
And you have a family as well here.
Yes, I do. I'm blessed with a wonderful wife, my best friend. We've been married, just had our 30th wedding anniversary. I have a 27-year-old son who's also a believer, and a 23-year-old daughter. We have a daughter-in-law, no grandkids yet, but I've been truly blessed.
You know, just a couple of details that I love about you. Number one, you are an elder at Orangewood, and I just think that is the most wonderful thing to see people not only involved in their church, but you've taken that to another level, if you will, and being part of the leadership of that church. And it's a well-known, very important church here in Central Florida, and I just think it's great that they have folks that are carrying the burden for the Lord and carrying the responsibilities the way you're doing. So thank you for doing that.
Oh, you're very welcome. I've really enjoyed it. I've been an elder there for about 20 years, maybe a little more. I think it was 99 or 2000. I truly enjoy serving alongside our pastoral staff and alongside my fellow elders, and get together with our deacons and have joint meetings occasionally. And it's just an honor and a privilege to help serve the Bride of Christ.
Well, it is a big role and one that is important. So I want to say thank you so much for doing that. Tell us a little bit about your background, how you grew up, where you grew up, how you came to know the Lord.
Okay. I was born in Missouri, the Show Me State. Did not live there very long. My late father was coaching at the time, coaching football, my mom was from Arkansas, and that's where the two of them met.
What part of Arkansas?
From in southeast Arkansas, little tiny town, Fordyce, where Bear Bryant is from, is how most people know it.
But not too terribly far from Camden and El Dorado.
Yes, correct. And both my mom and my father grew up on farms. My dad in the Boot Heel of Missouri, and my mom in southeast Arkansas. And when they met and got married, my father was coaching. I had two older brothers, and I was the third and last, no sisters. So when I was born, we lived in Missouri just only about a year or so. Then we moved to Arkansas for a couple of years when my father coached there. And then we came to Florida, and we lived in a couple of small towns, Arcadia, south of us, Lake Placid, down in the Sebring area. And then we moved to Ocala for just a year or so.
Yeah.
And
Your dad was still coaching?
He was still coaching all that time.
And was this a high school coach?
Yes, high school mm-hmm. football coach. My mom was a stay-at-home mom at that time. But then when we moved to Orlando, I believe it was 1969, I was age 7.
Oh, my goodness. That's pre-Disney.
Pre-Disney. I tell mm-hmm. people that if you've lived here before Disney, you can almost call yourself a native.
yes. So,
Yes, I can remember as a kid, we went out and saw the Preview Center in 1971, I think, when the park opened in 72. And thinking how neat that was going to be. And Orlando was obviously much smaller then. But we moved to Orlando, and I had been here ever since second grade on. We moved across the city a couple of times while my father's coaching jobs changed from time to time. And then my mom went to work at a law firm in downtown Orlando when we were all a little older in school, and she was a bookkeeper there. My father finished out his coaching career at UCF. He was the head golf coach there in the late 80s.
He obviously had to be a pretty good golfer himself.
Yeah, he wasn't too bad. Wasn't too bad. And he kind of got me wanting to play it. He was our coach in, at that time, junior high school. We were at Lee Junior High, now College Park Middle School. Mm-hmm. That's when I started playing. And then I played on my high school team. My father coached at UCF under Gene McDowell, when Gene McDowell was the athletic director and head coach. And then my father had some real bad health setbacks and had to give up coaching.
Mm-hmm. So you said late father. So he passed away how long ago?
He passed away in 1998. Mm. Far too young. And mm-hmm.
Yes, indeed.
And then I lost my mom in 2018. I had two older brothers, and sadly, I lost my oldest brother on January 1st of this year, pretty unexpectedly.
Mm. Sorry to hear this.
Tragedies that you go through, and I've told a few people about this, and both my brothers grew up here too, obviously, and, UCF graduates, and, my oldest brother had a outpouring of support and people that knew him. And, you're prepared when you know that day's coming when your parents are going to go, but it was felt differently with a sibling going, mm-hmm. especially when you're really not expecting it. And it was health issues with him. But I found myself, that's when you lean on the Lord even more.
Really? Yes, yeah. No doubt. Yeah. And, so many people have, because of all this pandemic stuff, so many people have found themselves in that very scenario with this pandemic, with this COVID stuff. It's taken so many lives. And in the beginning, the first time around, I didn't know anybody that was sick with this thing. And now suddenly it's almost like who hasn't had some sort of brush one way or the other. Sadly, some of them have ended in fatalities.
Yes. More. And especially now with this Delta variant, I just attended a funeral for a police officer that I was working with closely through my career. I'm sure we'll get into later, but I represent law enforcement, and this person passed away at 39. It's happening more and more. It's terribly sad to see. And I know that a part of our daily prayers are and should be, can all of us continue to be, that God would take this COVID from us, but that He would be glorified in doing so.
Mm-hmm. In all these years of growing up with your dad being the coach and all that, was there an active church life in your family back then?
I would love to say there was. We grew up, my mom and dad both went to church growing mm-hmm. up, but we were raised, we didn't go to church much on Sundays. My father used to kind of jokingly say he'd grown up in the Assemblies of God, and he said he was there so much every time the doors open, he said that he didn't go. And so my mother was the devoted wife. She wasn't going to take us without him, so we didn't go. Now, probably when I was 12 or so, or 11, I remember we did go to a non-denominational church.
Mm-hmm.
It was a friend of my father's who was a local building contractor who had a massive home on the west side of town, and he was hosting a pastor to preach in their, they had a pool and a game room for their kids. And he had set it up for a church service. And the pastor that day, he must have been Baptist because he did an altar call at the end. And I felt something tugging on me that day to come forward. And I did, you know, and I prayed the prayer of acceptance. And but we, even after that, we didn't go to church regularly. So I would like to say that I that we had that church experience, but we did. It was really not until I got to college that I began going to church regularly. But I will say my parents, you know, they always, I think, tried to raise us to do the right thing. Mm-hmm.
They taught you the values, if not taking you to the service.
Absolutely. That's mm-hmm. a great way to say it.
Mm-hmm. You know, and when you, you're young, like you went down that time and prayed at the altar, it obviously did something in your heart, even though there wasn't commensurate attending services after that, it was still something pretty significant.
Yes, it was. You know, I could, you know, some people call it their conscience. I think we as Christians know it's the Holy Spirit that helps guide us after we've surrendered to the Lord. And even though I wasn't going to church as a teenager, I still felt like I felt his presence, I believe. And of course, I still, like any teenager, I made my share of mistakes, mm-hmm. but I had a fairly strict type A personality father, if you can imagine, as a coach. And
very disciplined, yeah.
So I you know, some might even say scared straight. I wasn't going to get in any trouble or too much trouble because I didn't want to bear the consequences. So I tried to do the right thing, I guess, if you will. But again, when I went off to college, that's when I really I started attending church regularly, and I saw the importance of maybe corporate worship and being in church.
Did that involvement in college come from a particular friendship or relationship, or was it more like an event where you just mm-hmm. suddenly felt in a similar way in your youth, you felt an impression from God?
I wish I could tell you it was the latter, Mike, that it was some sort of that moved me, but it was actually a girl I met.
Okay, all right, there we go. That's that's cool.
And she said she came from a strict church upbringing and said, if you're going to date me, we're going to go to church.
You're going to go to church.
And I said, okay.
Yeah.
And it was actually in church, I think it was my junior or senior year, that I actually got baptized. I'll never forget that. It was at a Baptist church. And interestingly, I was in Tallahassee, and the chaplain, the pastor of the church there at the Baptist church just happened to, this is the kind of irony of this, is that he had coached with my father in Orlando. And he was also the team chaplain of the Florida State football team. And
your alma mater.
Yes, yes. And it was just ironic that this man who knew my father and coached with him and was the team chaplain under Bobby Bowden was the pastor of his own church up there. And that's where I was attending church regularly and got baptized by mm-hmm. him. And then after that, I continued on even into law school, going to a Baptist church out in Oxford, Mississippi, where I went to Ole Miss Law School.
When you were up there at FSU, did you have a chance to interact with Bobby Bowden?
Very briefly. I was fortunate and blessed to interact with him several occasions afterwards when I came back here after law school and eventually got married and settled down. I was president of the Orlando Seminole Club. It's our alumni booster club. And I got to meet Coach Bowden several times when mm-hmm. he came here to speak. Got the opportunity to pick him up at the airport once and had my son with me, which was a really incredible experience, and got to take him to dinner. And then
You had really great one-on-one time then.
Yes. It was a fantastic experience.
Oh, yeah.
He's as genuine as you know, he just passed away and they had his service, but he's as genuine as you've always heard.
Mm-hmm.
He's just the same way you see him. And when you're Yeah, he had a great way of making anyone that he met feel like, you know, you were the most special person or he'd known you forever.
Yeah. Yeah, Gator, Seminole,
absolutely,
Kane, yeah. No matter who we are, we really lost a good one there.
Yeah, he was a great one. I think he truly modeled, his service was shown just last weekend, and he really modeled, I think, trying to live for Christ. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of his sons even read a letter at the very end of the service, Terry Bowden did, that Bobby wrote in 2004 after he lost his grandson in a tragic car accident. And Bobby, it was on the eve of playing Miami, so you can imagine he had a lot on his mind, but obviously his family was most important. It's this really heartfelt letter about how the family would always be there for each other, but he hoped that they all came to know the Lord if they didn't know already, and mm-hmm. that he would have, if he gets to heaven, which he wrote in this letter that, and I know I'm going there, he said, but if I get there and you aren't there with me, I will feel like I have failed as a father.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that's what we are called on to be as parents, is to model, following Christ to our kids. It's to pass down generationally.
You know, in this day and age where so many of our heroes are gone like that, they go away and they're no longer with us. And so many people that are in so many different areas of leadership do not share the kind of values that he lived and really fought for. That creates, does it not, a kind of almost like a hole. We have a blank space where it used to be filled with people who had a commitment toward what was right, what would be biblical, what would be considered old-fashioned belief. We need more of that today, don't we?
I absolutely agree. And I think it's getting more and more difficult in the marketplace and especially in the workplace to share your faith, to just live authentically. And that's one thing that is, again, just speaking about the way Bobby lived, from everything I've read and those testimonials that we heard, that's exactly how he lived. And that's how we're called to live. But it is getting harder. And I can see that in my own occupation, mm-hmm. as an employment lawyer, and the challenges that people face. And I think it's becoming even more difficult today in today's culture, today's society. I think Christians and the Christian church are under attack, but we do know how the outcome's going to be. We do know that Christ is going to win, and that in our message just last week at Orangewood, our pastor was reminded us that, you know, we know the outcome of this story.
Mm-hmm.
We know who's going to win. It may look like everything's going bad, but we can rest assured in knowing the outcome.
And as we cry out for leaders in schools, it's very clear that, especially in colleges, our major colleges, there is a message that's going out today to a lot of students in America that would look nothing like what Bobby Bowden or the other instructors that I would have had when I was in college would have been sharing. It's much more progressive, much more liberal, much more humanistic.
It absolutely is.
If not atheistic.
Yes. And I think there is a real movement within universities, and sadly, even some of the private universities, not just the public, but the private universities as well, that there's such a move towards, if we're going to use term liberal or the left,
mm-hmm.
but mainly just omitting God in any way, shape, or mm-hmm. form from being discussed. And you would think that universities and college campuses should be the one place where free expression, free ideas, but we're even seeing that begin to be closed down, which is sad.
Mm-hmm. Let's pick up on that in a moment. We're up against a break. My guest today is Gary Wilson. He's an attorney in the Orlando area. We'll be back with Gary in a moment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike. Hey, my guest today in the studio is Gary Wilson. Gary is an attorney. He studied at FSU, but I just learned during the break that his is a marriage that is a house divided. And wouldn't you know that his wife is a Gator? Go Gators. How about that? I got it in there somehow.
Sure. Yes, not only is my wife a Gator, her entire family went to Florida. So it's interesting, when we first met, some of my friends from law school, some of my most dear friends even today, fraternity brothers, you know, couldn't believe, oh, you're marrying a Gator. But once they met her, they said, oh, we can see why now. But no, her grandfather taught at the pharmacology school. And her grandmother, this is kind of interesting, her grandmother went to FSCW, which was the predecessor to Florida State. Now, a lot of people, if they're relatively new to the state of Florida, don't know that there was a seminary east of the Suwannee and mm-hmm. west of the Suwannee. And the University of Florida used to be in Lake City. And that was a seminary east of the Suwannee. And Tallahassee was a seminary west of the Suwannee. And in 1901, they created, the legislature decided to make them an all-male school and mm-hmm. all-female school. Alachua County offered free utilities. I know this all from my Gator's wife's side of the family.
And that just seems like, for those that live in Alachua County now, that seems impossible.
Yes, they got free services, and they moved, packed up and moved from Lake City, moved to Gainesville. Florida State stayed where they are, but they became FSCW up until, so there was an all-female college, all-male college. And after World War II, the GI Bill, all of these men were coming home. And in 1947, they made them both co-ed again, mm-hmm. Which is, and my wife's grandmother was a graduate of FSCW. And from what I learned from her when she was still alive, when my wife and I were first dating, sometimes the graduates would go down to Gainesville, or somehow they would meet these graduates from University of Florida. And so my wife's grandmother, that was an FSCW graduate, and married her grandfather, who
another
was teaching,
house divided.
Exactly, teaching at Florida. And then my wife's whole family, mom, dad, brothers, aunts, uncles, cousins, all went to Florida. So I was sort of the black sheep on Thanksgiving when we used to go up to Gainesville to see them, which was always 2 days before the big game, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But now, no, they're wonderful. They've taken me in, and they've been a wonderful family.
Now, you coming from a football coach dad, that has to be still a pretty big deal in your home, college football, and watching when Bobby mm-hmm. Bowden was leading FSU. Those had to be some pretty exciting times.
Yes, they were. They were great. Always, to me, it's my favorite sport, college football. I love to play golf when I can, and that's what I did when I was young. But for viewing, I love college football. I'm kind of curious what the future holds for college football with all these changes, some of which I can understand from an employment law, labor law. I can understand some of the tension there with what the players are getting versus these huge coaches' salaries and these TV contracts. I mm-hmm. get that. But it does kind of make you wonder if the future of the game is where it's headed, and all this conference realignment stuff we see.
Yeah, now they're able to make money. They're able to yes. actually participate, when the NCAA would for years have forbade that. And the mm-hmm. question would become, you know, is money going to rule? Is money going to really determine what happens out there on the field?
It really, it's possible that it could. There was originally some movement at Northwestern University about wanting them to even unionize. We haven't heard much of that in the last couple of years, but with this name, image, likeness bill that passed, and even our governor signed it and wanted Florida to be on the front end, and I can understand that. It is a whole new world of what it's going to be like. They reported that this incoming Alabama quarterback, for example, hasn't even played a down yet and has already earned over $1 million, they believe, in endorsements. So it is going to be the wild, wild yeah. west. Mm-hmm. And I just hope the sport of college football doesn't become the minor leagues to the NFL. Mm-hmm. Because I think it would lose something then. There is something magical about a college football game that anyone's ever been to one with, because with the band and the fans, there's just a different level of excitement and interest, it seems like, than a pro game, at least to me and the friends I watch with or get together with. There's something special about college football, but because in the past they weren't getting paid. They were truly, mm-hmm. it was different. But so we'll see what the future holds. And but I do hope that we don't lose that great game.
You know, talking about the impact that money brings and how money ruins so many things like that, it really is kind of a scary thing. But I mean, this impact of college versus pro, I mean, for years, the NBA had the one and done, and you just go for 1 year and then you're off. And I'm thinking all of the work and all of the effort that all these coaches there in that college for that 1 year put invested into this person. You used to get 4 years, you know, out of one of your investments and recruits, and you put this this kid and the time into him, and then now 1 year later they're gone.
And yes, so you're seeing that in basketball, of course, college basketball, and then in college football it's happening now too. The college coaches are saying they're having to re-recruit their own players because now they have this thing they call the transfer portal, where they can decide if they're not happy, they're free to transfer. So you can imagine a coach who's got the pressure by his alumni and fans to win, and he's not only having to recruit young men to play, but he's also having to hopefully retain his mm-hmm. players, make sure they're not disgruntled or unhappy and wow. and feeling like they're going to transfer somewhere else. Mm. So it is a whole changing landscape, and all that's happened just in the last couple of years with the transfer rules and the name, image, likeness, or they call NIL, that the NCAA has had to accept because the Supreme Court has said it's okay for them to earn some compensation.
And then there's this big debate that's going on right now with this gender issue and how it's invading sports, particularly women's sports. And the things that we heard, oh my goodness, it was the story of the Olympics, almost ad nauseum to me. I mean, it's like the normal things that we hear about in the Olympics, to me, were greatly flavored and kind of distorted because of all of the attention on this gender equality, gender neutrality, transgendered athletes serving in this. And, you know, this is for you as an attorney. I would love to just pick your brain and say, what do you think the world is coming to when we're asked to believe something that is as biblically off as it could be about whether or not you were born male and or female, and now you're being told you're kind of neutral. You're not decided yet. You're binary. That's a tough thing for me.
Yes, it is. And I think it would be, it's probably, I'm sure it's tough for any Bible believing Christian to sit back and think, are we really actually having to debate or discuss someone's gender that they're born with? And I'm not talking about adolescent gender confusion, which you hear that I'm talking, you know, when kids might, you know, my wife's a preschool director and has a master's in early childhood education, and she's a devout believer as well. And she just scratches her head over this too. And again, we're not talking about young children, like a boy playing with dolls or a girl playing with, you know, whatever,
a G.I. Joe.
Yeah. Joe. We're not talking about that. We're talking about legitimately now saying you don't have to put a gender on a birth certificate, or you can let the child decide later on how he or she believes they are for that day or that moment in time. Mm-hmm. And I think it goes again to how our country has drifted from just the most basic of biblical foundation that you know, God created man and woman. He truly did. He created man and woman in his image, separate but equal, but with separate roles and responsibilities, and there are differences. And I feel truly heartbroken for, and it seems to be happening more with, you know, female athletes who are trying to compete, and then someone has a transgender mm-hmm. person who was
yes.
a male.
Right. Born biologically a male
and is competing against females from birth. And you don't have to be a medical doctor or a physiologist to know that there are body distinctions between a man and a woman.
And yet we're being told, this is the part, this is the very point, we're being told and we're being expected by those in leading these discussions, whether they're political or whether they're judges or whether they are, university professors, we're being called on to just accept this and say, let's pretend that this is really the way it is. And I have to believe, Gary, that most Americans that are out there in the flyover states are looking at this. They're going, no way. This is silly. What are we doing? It's only when you get to the big cities or the big college towns where this progressive thought is coming out. And yet this is, it's being picked up by the news media and it's being crammed down our throats.
It absolutely is. And, you know, there's studies that show that most journalism schools at the colleges and universities are overwhelmingly, the professors are overwhelmingly, Democratic either donors or supporters,
mm-hmm.
Or they're progressive in their thought. And so that's being taught. So that's why it's being reported in the manner of which it is from journalists, as they say, who come out of those institutions, who tell us this is the way it should be. And I would agree with you. I think it's not only just the flyover states, but I think most people, if you ask them one-on-one, what do you think about this? If they didn't think they were going to get attacked or criticized or canceled is the mm-hmm. term now.
Yeah, that's right.
I think most people one-on-one would tell you this is insanity. It's absurd. But they can't do that. You can't do that. Or you will. I think people are afraid to state just basic truths like, no, there are men and women and you are born man mm-hmm. or woman. Men can't have babies. Some basic things that are biological that are a part of how God created us. But we are so beaten down with culture and the media. And when you turn on your TV to every commercial, to sitcoms and how they portray things, you could get to a state where you could begin to think, is something wrong with me if mm-hmm. if I still stand by biblical principles and truths? And the answer is no, you're not off. It's just they're trying to educate you in a different way to accept this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it does get hard. I think even in the big cities, there are believing Christians that would love to state how they really feel, but they've just been, they're to a point where they don't feel like, is it worth the fight? Is it worth the argument? Is it worth being shamed or shunned or told you're a bigot or told that you're prejudiced or whatever the case may be?
And I just have to believe it is. I just have to believe that if we acquiesce as adults, as people who have lived and I hope my kids, always carry this as well, but we've just got to come and see that this is an important deal. It's a big deal, very big deal, that truth is truth. The Bible says, let your yeas be yeas in the book of James and your nays be nays. But we're living in a time where, boys it can be girls. At least that's what they're telling us. I'm sorry, it is not true.
Amen to that. Yeah. I agree with you. I wholeheartedly agree with you. And I think there's more people than we could know that feel that way. But again, I think there's just this fear of standing for those basic truths.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a time years ago in the whole Hollywood acting world that if you were blackballed, you didn't work anymore. And that is now carrying over into what you mentioned earlier, the cancel culture, that now if you stand up and you actually say something that you believe. We're seeing it happen all the time on social media, where accounts are being blocked and being just forfeited, canceled, and not forfeited, but actually canceled. Right. Because of a statement, a post that you made that that reflected a belief that would not be in line with the narrative that is being taught to us. And for no other wrong than that, for no other wrong than that, if you had voted for our last president, if you made a strong statement about President Trump, you could be canceled because of that.
Absolutely.
That's not right. We've got to have somebody stand up and say, we've got to hold on and we can't give in. I believe there's a lot to lose here.
I think there is. And I think we see it with the debate going on about the social media tech giants.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, they want it both ways. They want to say, well, we're just a platform. Therefore, they have this exemption from lawsuits.
Well said.
And
both ways.
Yes. And you know, just regardless of, there are mixed feelings even about the COVID vaccination, let's say, for example, because it hasn't been FDA approved. It just hasn't. That's a fact. That's not speaking for or against the vaccination, but the fact is it hasn't been FDA approved yet. We know that. But yet most people have gotten the vaccination. But there's doctors, I've seen it myself with my own eyes, who have spoken or just raised some questions, let's put it that way. And they have had their videos taken down from
mm-hmm.
YouTube
mm-hmm.
just for raising questions and saying, you know what, I think this or I think that, just stating their own opinion. And it's something that I thought I would not see in the United States.
Yeah,
I never thought I would see just having a different opinion or raising a question. And that begs the question of what I hope Congress will, they find things to certainly spend their time talking about and voting upon. But here's one they should vote, should come before them, and that is the, I think it's Section 323, if you hear that referred to, I believe that's the provision that allows them to be exempt from lawsuits. But there is a move to say you can't have it both ways. You can't say we're only a platform and then censor speech mm-hmm. that you don't like. And they have boards that literally, they're just fallen sinners like all of us who are sitting and deciding, well, that doesn't, you know, that's not in line with what we like. So you're banned for a month or you're banned for a week or whatever. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be that way. They should not be free from then getting sued. As a lawyer, I'm saying that they should be, if they want to play that game of censoring speech, they should be subject to the same as everybody else that can get sued. It may not be a valid suit, but they should not be exempt from it.
My guest today is Gary Wilson. We're going to pick this up in just a moment in the next segment. But boy, this is good stuff, Gary. Gary is an attorney in Orlando. I'll be back with him in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike. Got one more segment here with Gary Wilson, an attorney. Just to let you know a little bit about him, he has been declared to be one of Florida's super lawyers for 2012 through 21. The city's top attorneys by Orlando Magazine, and also awarded the best lawyers by the Wall Street Journal. Now, that's pretty impressive. I've got somebody here who's speaking that not only has an education, but clearly is one that is looking at his profession, that being an attorney, through the lens of a biblical worldview. And boy, do we need people. Whether they're attorneys or whether they are bankers or whatever profession, Gary, I just believe we need to have people like you who are going to stand up, who have biblical convictions, who have courage, and who have insights. You know, I think of the scripture about the sons of Issachar in the Bible, and they were described as people who understood the times and knew what to do. That's what a son of Issachar was, somebody who could read culture, but they knew the right answer. The right answer was not what culture was saying. The right answer is what God, his opinion, what he would be saying. That's what we need.
I agree with that. I think a lot of times we do fall back on, well, what do you think about this? And It's always important to be heard and to listen to others' views. And I firmly believe that as someone who practices employment law and including civil rights law, it's always important to be heard. But as a believer, I think we also have to take a step back and say, well, what does God say about that? Mm-hmm. I mean, that should be our guiding principle. What I feel about something is important, but it's not as important as what God may have already said about it. I may have my views on it, and I may even think to myself, I wonder why God that's his position on that. But he is ultimately supreme, and I think that's that needs to be our starting point.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's fine for people to ask that question, because I think the natural mind will ultimately ask that question at some point, because we tend to think, and if we stay with our own thinking, we tend to think, well, how would God think about this? Like we could ever come up with that.
Right.
Which is so crazy if you get right down to it, because the Bible itself says, as high as the heavens are above the earth, so are his ways. And we could say, so is his knowledge above our knowledge, above our ways. We are not God. That's why he is God.
It's so true. Amen. And, I think we are put in situations by God's providence to allow us to illustrate his love and compassion and to try to discern through the Holy Spirit how he would want us to handle a situation. But, walking with the Lord or abiding in the Lord is about you need to know him. You need to know his word. It's like any relationship. If you don't know that person, how well of a relationship are you going to have?
Right.
If you don't spend time.
That's it. That's what I was just getting ready to say. You got to spend time for that.
Yes, you do. And it requires a discipline. And believe me, I know as well as probably everybody out there listening how busy our days are and how busy we can get. But we have to find some time to spend a few minutes with the Lord in reading a passage or praying to God and, mm-hmm. and spending that time with him and asking for his guidance and wisdom. I know you're talking about leaders. I especially around the time of elections, whether it's local, state, or federal elections, I part of my prayer in that time is that God raise up godly men and women who will seek your will first before theirs. And that should apply not only to our elected leaders, but that should be the way I personally believe how we should guide our life when we start our day is to seek that godly wisdom mm-hmm. to know how to guide our path.
You know, the Bible talks about when the righteous rule, the people rejoice. And whether or not people realize that Bible verse is there, it is there. And the truth is that we know that no one's perfect and no one can, apart from the imputed righteousness of Christ into a believer's life, no one is righteous in and of themselves. But there are people who are able to stand for what is right. And more than ever today, we need people to do that.
Amen to that. You know, I wrote down, I didn't know what questions you were going to ask me today, Mike, but I had listened to something yesterday, and I thought it might apply today. And it comes from Proverbs 31, and it's something that reminds me about what I need to try to do in my vocation, where I think God has called me, and that is in employment law. And everyone out there, God has put you somewhere, and He's got you where He wants you to be. I have great love and respect for our pastors and anyone that goes into the mission field, missionaries who are called truly into the profession of sharing the gospel. But even as believers, each day we are on our own mission field, wherever we're working, whether it's in an office, it's out in the field somewhere, in a factory, in a store, in a restaurant, we are all made in the image of God and we are to represent Him. But the verse in Proverbs 31, 8 and 9 is, speak for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute. And in 9, speak up and judge fairly, defend the rights of the poor and needy. That's where leadership comes in. We need to help those around us. And there's so much tension right now in our country that we see with, for example, racial tension. But I believe in whether the CRT, critical race theory, and the debate about that, and
1619.
Yes, in the 1619. But, you know, and this came from a pastor in Lexington, Kentucky, Robert Cunningham. He said, "The Bible is more than sufficient to arrive at solutions that CRT seeks to find, and that sin remains the problem and Jesus remains the solution." Mm. If we just know that following Jesus and only Jesus can liberate oppression by abolishing oppression itself, that's the racial tension that we see. I mean, any discrimination, and that's what I deal with in my daily job, is in large part as an employment lawyer, is discrimination. Any discrimination is sinful, and whether it's racial or religious or you name it. It's, if we understood at its core, it's a sin issue. It's a heart issue. And that's where we need to approach it. There's nothing that the Bible hasn't already addressed that we're dealing with
mm-hmm.
now out in culture.
And the Bible deals with it in much more complete ways than what many people could ever imagine. And that's the amazing wonder about the Bible. It's the living Word of God. He gave that to us. He told us what we need. He didn't tell us everything we want to know, but absolutely. He told us what we need.
That's so true. That's so true. And I that's what I think. I had no intentions when I got out of law school of going into an employment law. I was working for a company, and we had a situation come up when I was general counsel of that called for the need to bring in an outside employment lawyer to help us. And it was through working alongside that attorney back in 1989 or 90
mm-hmm.
that I got into employment law. And mm-hmm. I felt, once I started doing it, I felt like, I would like to try to help people through who have been through a difficult situation. It's allowed me to share my faith, on some occasions, you know, you wear the hat of attorney and counselor, it's called. So, that's been, I've been fortunate to get to do that. And I will say I have great, great respect for the men and women in uniform. I've been, it's been my pleasure to represent law enforcement, police unions. I think this is critical times. Thankfully, Florida is not one of those states where we're seeing police attacked the way they are in some of the big cities outside of Florida. But I've truly enjoyed the opportunities I've had along with my law partner to represent men and women of uniform, as well as other employees, of course, in the public and private sector.
I would love your opinion on this. When you look at this call for defunding that's happening in areas like Minnesota and Oregon and maybe New York, do you think that the day's going to come anytime soon where people there are just going to wake up and say, wait a minute, what kind of stupid stuff are we talking about here? Defunding the police? Do you think that they're actually, I know they've done some damage already to a lot of these communities. Do you think this is going to continue?
I think it might in a few of the more progressive cities, or a few of them might try it, and the other cities are probably going to watch and probably watch it fail miserably.
Oh, yeah.
I see that the Chicago mayor has already done a 180, and now she's saying that she's going to put more money back into policing. And I
guarantee you the news media won't publicize that the same way they did when they were calling for the defunding.
Right. And I think, fortunately, we have a governor in our state who's very pro law enforcement. And there are states not so fortunate, of course. And from representing the law enforcement I do, primarily up in Volusia County right now, although I had previously represented law enforcement here in Orange County, up in Volusia County, we're going into the bargaining table with eight different cities up there, or eight different police agencies. And it's getting harder and harder to get men and women to want to go into law enforcement. Mm. And I can't blame them.
I can't either. It's crazy. The one has their back.
Right. And so to answer your question further, I think I would hope that people were going to wake up. I think by and large, again, it gets down to most people realize how absurd it is to do away with defunding law enforcement, defunding the police, and bringing in instead, I guess, community counselors and things. I can tell you this much, Mike. I have a daughter who's getting her master's in social work, and she's been on the mission field. I can't imagine for the life of me her being called out to a domestic violence situation, which police officers will tell you that's one of the most scary calls to go to because you don't know what you're walking into.
That's right. A knock on the door could end up with a gunshot from the inside.
Exactly. And you're going to tell me you're going to send a family counselor there instead of law enforcement ready to assist and aid if something goes haywire or someone walks out with a gun. Absolutely. I think we should continue to stand behind law enforcement, do everything we can to urge our elected leaders. And again, thankfully, we're in a state that seems to still value and support law enforcement. But I can tell you, deal with it every day, there are vacancies in law enforcement agencies here in Florida, not as bad as the many that are retiring or resigning in Chicago, New York, and Portland and Seattle. But there are openings even here, in part because of the minimum wage law that just went in. So it's making it, you know, people are saying I can go to work at, you name it, a retailer and make $15 to $17 an hour. Why should I go be a law enforcement officer and start at $20 an hour and put my life at risk?
Because they do. Every time they wake up in the morning and put on their belt and strap their gun to them. I mean, they don't know when they leave the house if that's going to be the last time they walk out of that door.
Absolutely. And I can tell you from doing this for almost 31 years now, representing law enforcement through various agencies, those men and women go to work every day. They want to get home to their families.
Yeah, they do.
They don't put on their uniform and look to go out and cause somebody a problem. Are there some bad officers? Sure. Are there bad employees or employees that make mistakes in any profession? Yes. But it is not, I can say from working alongside law enforcement and representing them many years, I don't see any difference in the field of law enforcement to put legs under this theory that law enforcement are out there to violate someone's rights or that they're racist or anything like that. I mean, again, are there a few? There are certainly bad employees in any profession.
Right.
We know that. But I don't think law enforcement should be singled out that way.
I agree. Gary, we're out of time. I've got to have you back. This has been way too much fun to sit here and chat with you. I really mean it. I've got to come back. And we'll have him back. Gary Wilson, attorney. And so grateful that he's here. And we'll hear more from him the next time around. But friends, thank you for joining us. We'll catch you the next time right here on Afternoons with Mike.